Bridgebank helps breakthrough ideas actually break through and remains dedicated to providing financial solutions to those committed to leveraging innovation to make the world a better place. Bridgebank, a division of Western Alliance Bank. Bridgebank, be bold, venture wisely.
Hey there, this is Brittany Luce from NPR's It's Been a Minute. KQED's podcasts like The Bay, Bay Curious, Mindshift, Right Nowish, and more all tell the stories of the Bay and beyond with reliable, human-centered journalism. They aim to inspire, make you think, entertain, and expand your understanding of the place you call home. Here's how you can support podcasting at KQED.
Showing your support is easy, and you can join Brittany in supporting KQED Podcast too at donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
From KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Demonstrators gathered in San Jose, Oakland, San Francisco, and across the country last night after a grand jury brought no charges against Louisville police for Breonna Taylor's killing. We'll talk about the decision and the protests with Oakland civil rights attorney John Burris. And later, the federal response to the pandemic and how the nation is faring in its fight against COVID-19. This follows a grim milestone as the country's coronavirus death count passed 200,000 this week. What's the outlook as the Bay Area opens up and flu season approaches? And what do changes at the FDA mean for the rollout of the vaccine we're all waiting for? That's next, after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Protesters across the Bay Area and nationwide continue to hold rallies today after a Kentucky grand jury declined yesterday to charge Louisville police in the murder of Breonna Taylor, who was shot in her home 6 months ago during a botched drug raid on a neighboring apartment. The grand jury brought criminal charges against only one of the three police officers involved in the raid for recklessly firing into the other apartment. We're going to talk about why the police avoided homicide charges and what's next as advocates continue to fight for justice for Breonna Taylor. And joining us is civil rights attorney John Burris. And John, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning. It's always good.
Good morning to you. And let me begin by just saying how terribly sad and hurt and angry people are feeling that justice definitely was not attained in all of this and justice for the killing of this exceptional young woman. I wanted to quote her lawyer, her family's lawyer, Ben Crump, who said, "We'll go to our graves proclaiming Breonna Taylor did not get justice," from the Kentucky Attorney General's office in the response. And he talked about righteous anger. And there's a lot of that out there. There's a lot of sadness as well as righteous anger. And I believe you said earlier today in an interview that all three police officers could have easily been prosecuted for manslaughter.
Absolutely. My view on this, well, recognizing first that there was a shot from the boyfriend in the direction of the police, who was thinking that he was being burglarized or being attacked, the police obviously had a right to defend that and respond to it. But my thinking on this was, look, there was 35 shots fired in the direction of this individual. To me, that represents maybe an honest and good faith belief, but unreasonable belief that their lives were in danger after that first shot. And it seems to me that's a manslaughter type charge. And I don't know why that issue, if it wasn't given to the jurors for them to decide. I think we'd all feel better if the range of options were made available to all of us to see what, in fact, was presented to the grand jury. These are serious issues for the African-American community and all communities, because at the end of the day, when you see a young person get killed who wrongfully and unjustifiably, you need to know that there's some way of justification for that. And whoever did that had to pay a price for it. And in this case, it looks like these officers will walk scot-free with no ramifications to them at all. And that's the hurting part. And to be honest with you, Michael, I also have a view that too much justification and efforts at getting justice is in the criminal justice system when an African-American is killed by the police. It rarely, rarely happens. I've been involved in one or two cases where there's been some indication, but the expectations are high, they're legitimate, but it always fails. And all it does is create anger, and then on top of anger, on top of anger. And so we are now, Breonna Taylor is really a function of a number of cases that this anger has built up over a period of time, where there's been no prosecution in case where clearly it should have been. So this is just one case in a microcosm of all kinds of cases. And it's hurtful, certainly to me as a prosecuting lawyer, and been involved as both a DA and a defense lawyer and a civil rights lawyer, to see this kind of situation take place. There seems to be, and could be, some political motivations involved here given the nature of the prosecutor, but we don't know that. Seems to me we need to know what was presented to the grand jury, because the DA can control what comes out of that grand jury. The attorney general in this case, he could have easily presented a case as such that he thinks this is manslaughter. There's some disputed facts involved here. Let a jury decide those facts, bring the charges, and then the evidence can be presented that I think the African-American community and all communities would feel better.
Would you go along then with it was Governor Andy Beshear, who's Kentucky governor, a Democrat, asked the attorney general to post all relevant evidence online. He said evidence that is, it can be released without affecting the charges that have been filed. You go along with that, I presume?
Absolutely. And, you know, the charges that are filed are so minor that I would imagine that the substantive amount of the evidence that was presented or can be presented would not impact upon the criminal charges that person faces. Frankly, I don't care anything about those charges, whether he was charged or not. The real question is there's an acknowledgement and an indication as to what impact any of this had on the death of Breonna Taylor. So for me, and more openness in this process would be much better than for the DA or grand jury to make a decision and we know nothing about it. You know, you don't have to have a grand jury. You can't present evidence at a plenary hearing where everyone can see it. Part of the problem that we have here is the lack of transparency and seemingly that we don't really know what happened here. The only thing we know is what the DA has told, the attorney general has told. And I will tell you, they claim that this one person says that she heard the announcement that they were coming in to the police, but 11 people did not hear it. That's the kind of thing that a jury can decide for themselves, because my experience is you can have police groupies that if they understand a certain thing is necessary, they will fill in the blanks. And I'm only saying is that that's the kind of thing that should be subject to cross-examination where other people can see it. But when it's presented in one way by the attorney general, there's little confidence that you can have that all that evidence has been presented, particularly when you have the prosecutor who is a political operative who is seeking to have greater opportunities and ambition as it relates to the Republican Party. So that causes skepticism in and of itself.
The Attorney General, Daniel Cameron, actually said his heart breaks. He is a protege of Mitch McConnell's. He's also someone who said criminal law is not meant to respond to every sorrow and grief, and he said it was not a no-knock warrant. And I'm wondering what your response is to his basic argument that it was justified because they got fired on first.
Well, I will concede and recognize that certainly if the officers are fired upon, they have a right to self-defense. I don't have any question about that. But I don't know that that extends to all 35 shots. And that's my point. I mean, that certainly they have a right to self-defense and they have a right. But I don't think that's the end of the question or the analysis as the prosecutor seemingly suggests. Because 35 shots along the way, there should have been some acknowledgement that this doesn't make a lot of sense. We're firing all these times and nobody else is firing. And so to me, that requires some analysis of what really took place in terms of what that caused all these 35 shots to take place. That's where I get to the point of, okay, you had a good faith belief at the outset, but at some point in time it became unreasonable, and that's where I see the manslaughter charge coming in. And I think that's a legitimate issue that a jury could look at and say yes, no, maybe. But I don't think it was presented in such a way to the grand jury, because the attorney general seemed to have a limited view. A shot was fired at the police. The police had a right to respond. That's the end of the discussion. And we're saying, I don't think that that's right at all, particularly given the number of shots that were fired.
We're talking with civil rights attorney John Burris. And what's your response to the decision? You can actually join us now. I'll invite you to do that. You can join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or getting in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're @KQED Forum. And please feel free to be part of the program. I'm getting some responses now. And here's a listener who said, could you start with a really simple explanation of what indictment means? I don't understand what it means and why they're saying there are no charges. Although, John, I think it's important to clarify, there were charges. There were charges of firing into the home next door, which had people inside, white people inside. But those were the only charges.
Those are the only charges. And an indictment, basically, we have evidence that suggests that you have committed a crime. And so, therefore, we are charging with you about that. That's what the indictment represents. And a failure to bring an indictment means that we have looked at whatever evidence we have. That evidence does not support a criminal violation, which then means that there has to be sufficient evidence the limited view is probable cause. There's sufficient evidence that they have a probable cause. However, when the police looks at these cases of the attorney general, they don't look at the question of probable cause. They need to know whether we can prove this beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's the difference that we see in criminal cases when involving the police than I see in other cases where people are charged on probable cause and not necessarily on the belief that at the time they have all the evidence. Because truth of the matter is, evidence does come in later. You do your investigation, and in the course of that, other evidence will come in. So it's not uncommon to bring a charge when you don't have all of the evidence, but you have sufficient evidence to bring a charge, which is probable cause. That obviously could be done in this particular case if the DA and the Attorney General wanted to do so.
What about the FBI investigating this? Federal law violations figure into this, and I'm also interested in getting your thoughts about the fact that the lawsuit that was filed by Breonna Taylor's mother, Tamika Palmer, which was settled last week and agreed to pay $12 million, also included enacting police reforms. How likely is that to happen, and what do you actually anticipate?
Well, I actually love this settlement with the police reforms, because when you look at a case like this, and we always do, you want to know, how can you prevent this from happening in the future? And so you look and see what was the breaking points here, what were the leverage points with this cause? And so one of which they looked at the no-knock argument and said, we're not going to have those in the future. You can have other kinds of investigations that have where you look to see if you've done your due diligence in a way to make sure. Because this was a case where, you know, they were looking, there was really an ex-boyfriend who wasn't living there, had not been there in a long time. So was it really recent evidence that you had to make this kind of decision? So it's a due diligence question. But I also just generally like the idea of reforms. I hope that the police will follow up on them. The problem with it, of course, is not a court order. But if there's an agreement amongst the parties, I like in good faith that they will try to do that. That's important. Now, in terms of a federal, you know, this is a case where you look to see if there are federal civil rights criminal violations. That's a very high standard. Rarely does the federal U.S. Attorney's Office, the Justice Department, bring these kind of cases. I have not seen hardly any under the present administration, attorney generals, because there's sort of an interest in not doing that, evaluating police to see if they're engaged in misconduct. That has certainly been the operating principle. But even not, if on a federal criminal civil rights violation, it's a specific intent to violate someone's civil rights.
John Burris with us, and let me read a couple comments that are coming in. We're going to have to go to a break in a minute here, but I want to give some listeners some attention here. One listener writes, I live in Oakland, and I was part of the protest downtown last night. The anger is visceral, and people are just fed up with everything. And Michael tweets, the problem is the system that allowed the police to enter Breonna's apartment after midnight. The search warrant gave them the legal right to be there, and once fired upon, the police had the legal right to shoot back. It's just a tragedy. And I should mention from our newsroom today at 11, there will be a press conference in downtown Oakland called by Kat Brooks and other activists gathering in front of a mural dedicated to Breonna Taylor. They're inviting the black women of Oakland to come and demand an end to the war on our lives. John Burris, thank you so much for joining us. Good to have you.
My pleasure. Take care. Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to talk about COVID. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.